This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invites you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And as for me, well, I'd like to tell you the easiest way I know to get the reputation of being the perfect host. Next time friends come over for dinner, before you sit down to the table, serve glasses of Petri California Sherry. Petri Sherry is the best beginning a good meal ever had. I say Petri Sherry because Petri Sherry is extraordinary sherry. You can tell by looking at it. Fold it to the light. Notice how clear it is. Notice its beautiful deep amber color. And you can tell Petri Sherry is unusual from just a whiff of its fragrance. And, of course, in the last analysis, you can tell just how fine a wine Petri Sherry is by tasting it. That's the best test of all. And that's where you'll get the most pleasant surprise, because Petri Sherry really tastes wonderful. A flavor right from the heart of the grape. So serve Petri Sherry to your family and your friends, and serve it proudly, because the name Petri is the proudest name in the history of American wines. And now I'm sure our good friend Dr. Watson's expecting us. Let's not keep him waiting. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Martell. You'll forgive me if I don't get up, won't you, my boy?
Of course, Doctor. What's the matter, a touch of rheumatism?
No, I played 18 holes of golf today.
I hope that when I'm your age, Doctor, I can be half as sprightly.
Oh, it's nice of you, but if you don't mind, we won't discuss the question of my age. So drop your chair, make yourself comfortable. I'll get on with tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure.
Well, from the hint you gave us last week, it sounded like quite a spooky story.
It was, to tell it, it certainly was. Towards the end of November in the year 1895, a dense yellow fog had settled down over London. For 4 or 5 days, it was impossible from our rooms in Baker Street to see the outline of houses opposite.
A real London pea-souper, huh, Doctor?
Yes, my boy, and it became most depressing. The first day, Holmes had spent in cross-indexing his huge book of criminal references. The second and third had been patiently occupied with a subject which he had recently made his hobby, the music of the Middle Ages. But when on the fourth day, pushing back our chairs after breakfast, we saw the greasy, heavy brown swirl still drifting past us and condensing in oily drops upon the window panes, Sherlock Holmes's impatient, active nature could endure this drab existence no longer. He paced restlessly about our sitting room, chafing against the inaction. After several minutes of these perambulations, he turned to me and spoke.
Anything of interest in the paper, Watson?
News of a revolution, a possible war, and of an impending change in the government. Nothing to interest you, though. No crimes of any importance.
The London criminal is certainly a dull and unenterprising fellow these days. Look out of the window, Watson. See how the figures loom up, are dimly seen, and then blend once more into the foggy depths. What a day for a thief or a murderer. He could roam London as the tiger does the jungle, unseen until he pounces, and then evident only to his victim.
That's a cheerful thought, I must say. Hello, hello. I wonder who that is.
Probably a visitor for Mrs. Hudson, or perhaps the local plumber has finally condescended to pay some attention to the faulty gas jet in our hallway.
I don't think you're right on either count. I can hear Mrs. Hudson's footsteps on the stairs.
Come in, come in. Yes, Mrs. Hudson, what is it?
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Holmes, but there's a gentleman to see you. Says it's most important. And he asked me to give you this card.
Oh, thank you. Oh, Mortimer Harley, eh? Show him up, please, Mrs. Hudson.
Very good.
Mortimer Harley, and who's he?
I've not had the pleasure of meeting him personally, but I'm quite familiar with his scientific reputation.
Scientific? In what does he specialize?
Oh, I suppose one might refer to him as one of the greatest authorities on all matters connected with the occult.
You mean the fellow dabbles in supernatural stuff and all that sort of thing?
I mean, my dear Watson, that Mortimer Harley is an extremely intelligent man with a thoroughly comprehensive and scholarly knowledge of his field and an intense belief in the existence of the supernatural force. And here he is to speak for himself. Oh, come in, Harley. Thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
You're Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, sir. This is my colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, Mr. Harley?
How do you do, Doctor?
Won't you sit down, sir?
Thank you. Well, you fellows probably wondering who I am and what's brought me here.
Well, we're not wondering who you are, Mr. Harley. My friend Holmes was just telling me of your scientific eminence.
I'm flattered that you know of me, Holmes. Just the same, you're wondering why I'm here.
Naturally, sir.
Well, since you know I'm a student of the occult, I'll get right down to my problem. Mr. Holmes, have you ever heard of the headless monk of Trevenis Chapel?
Oh, yes, indeed, Mr. Harley. An apparition to be counted among our more intangible national treasures, I should say.
I'm sorry to appear stupid, but I have never heard of the headless monk of whatever it is, Chapel.
Well, then, let me tell you about it, Doctor.
Yes, I wish you would.
Trevenis Manor in Cornwall was once an abbey. It was expropriated during the reign of Henry VIII, and several of the monks were killed in some of the minor difficulties attendant on such an act. But one of the murdered monks, a certain Brother Hugh, the chapel organist, was persistent. He still haunts the chapel today. He still plays the organ, and since he was beheaded, he always appears headless.
Charming little legend, Mr. Harley, but you don't expect us to believe it's anything but a legend, surely.
Ah, skeptic, eh? How about you, Mr. Holmes?
I'm extremely curious to know why you've come to see me, Mr. Harley.
I'll tell you why. I have a rare opportunity to investigate the phenomena. You see, the son of an old friend of mine, a young fellow by the name of Leonard Miles, is secretary to the owner of Trevenis Manor. He asked me to stay there, and I find the invitation irresistible, particularly since the phenomena have curiously increased of late, Mr. Holmes, almost as though some more mortal agency were motivating them.
Oh. Now I see why you've come to me, Mr. Harley.
I knew you would, Holmes. You see, I'm like my good friend and fellow investigator, Carnacki. I believe in being prepared to meet phenomena on either the natural or the supernatural plane. If the phenomena are real, they fall legitimately in my field.
Whereas if, as I'm sure you suspect, they are being contrived by human forces, then you think that's more in my department, eh, Harley?
Exactly.
Well, what do you say, Holmes? A little trip to Cornwall will be a nice few days. We'd probably escape the fog down there.
Oh, the places with the weather, Watson.
What?
I'm much more concerned with the fog that surrounds the appearances of the headless monk of Trevenis Chapel. And Mr. Harley, I accept your invitation with pleasure. There's still time to catch the Cornish Express. We can be at Trevenis Manor before the moon's up.
Hello? Who's this funny-looking foot coming down the steps towards us?
If I didn't hear the sound of his footsteps, I'd believe it was a psychic manifestation. Certainly looks as if he came from beyond the grave.
Who be ye, gentlemen? Where be ye going?
Well, supposing you tell us who you are first, my good man.
Who be I? I be David Pendragon, sir. That's who I be. Stable hand here at the manor. And I ask you, gentlemen, again, where you be going?
We're staying at the manor. And we're just going to take a look at the chapel.
Oh, don't he do that, sir. People that go in there don't often come out the way they go in, sir. Don't he do it, gentlemen?
What are you talking about, my good fellow?
I be talking about the ghoulies and the ghosties and the organ music that comes out of the nowhere.
You heard it?
Of course I heard it, sir. Just like I seen the poor monk walking around without his head on.
Take us into the chapel, will you? And show us where you saw the figure.
Aye, that I will not, sir. Not for all the gold in Porthcawl will I go back and chance seeing the poor lost soul wandering about without his head on. You gentlemen know what's good for ye. You'll not go in there either. Mark my words. Don't ye go in that chapel.
Extraordinary chap. Seems really frightened of the place.
Yes, but it's more than blind superstition that accounts for his reluctance. Let's go in, shall we?
Well, I suppose it's all right.
Great Scott! Listen to that. The organ. The ghost's playing it.
We are extremely fortunate. A psychic manifestation just as we enter. Remarkable.
Psychic manifestation? Rubbish. Look who's sitting at the keyboard. It's Holmes. Holmes!
What's the matter, Watson?
What's the matter? You frightened us to death, didn't you, Harley?
Well, speaking for myself, Doctor, he disappointed me. I thought it was a genuine phenomenon.
What do you think you're doing, Holmes? I thought you were still behind us.
I'm sorry if I frightened you, Watson. I was curious about this organ. I slipped in by the side door ahead of you and tested the instrument. It's in astonishingly good condition for a disused chapel, don't you think, Harley?
Yes, I do, Holmes.
One might reasonably presume that someone tends it with great care. In fact, I would go further
and
say...
Who are you? What are you doing in here?
We are guests at the manor house, and we decided to pay a visit to the chapel before we paid our respects to our host.
Oh. My father is your host. I'm Dorothy Brownlee.
How do you do, Dorothy? My name is Holmes, and these gentlemen, Dr. Watson and Mr. Harley.
How do you do, Dr. Watson, Mr. Harley? I heard the organ music, and I was terribly frightened. You've heard of the legend, I suppose.
You mean about the headless monk and the ghostly organ and music, Miss Brownlee?
Yes, Doctor. And it's more than a legend, I assure you. That's why I rushed over here as soon as I heard it. It must have frightened all the servants within hearing distance. Why were you playing the organ?
I'm curious to see whether it's in good repair.
Obviously it is, Mr. Holmes. Well, my father and his secretary, Mr. Miles, are expecting you, I know. Let's walk over to the house, shall we? I'm sure you've seen enough of the chapel for tonight. Father, this is Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
How do you do, sir? How do you do? This is my secretary, Leonard Miles.
How do you do, Mr.
Miles? How do you do, Mr. Miles? Dr. Watson? I'm afraid Mr. Brownlee is rather angry with me. I hadn't told him that you were an expert on psychic phenomena, Mr. Harley.
Well, I fail to see why the knowledge of that fact should make you angry, Mr. Brownlee.
I don't want you ferreting about into this so-called ghost business. There's been enough trouble in the neighborhood already. It's almost impossible to keep servants. And these Cornish people are incredibly superstitious.
You haven't seen the ghost yourself, Mr. Brownlee?
Oh, of course not. There isn't any ghost, I tell you.
You heard the mysterious organ playing?
No, I haven't. And I don't want to talk about it anymore. Yes, yes, what is it?
David Pendragon at the door. He's very anxious to see you, sir.
Pendragon? Oh, very well. Tell him to come in.
Yes.
David? What does he want, I wonder?
Pendragon, that's the fellow we met outside the chapel, isn't it?
Yes. Quite a colorful character.
Oh, he's a superstitious old fool, if you ask me. But he is a good groom. Yes, Pendragon, what is it?
Begging your pardon, sir, but there be trouble at the chapel again tonight. I says to myself, David, 'tis your duty to go to the master, I says.
Oh, never mind, never mind. What's the trouble?
As the moon was hanging low tonight, sir, I hears the organ a-playing.
But that was Mr. Holmes, my good man.
Aye, that's what he thinks, maybe. But what I says to myself is, what made him play the organ? Then this very night, I saw the headless monk. With my own eyes, I saw that poor soul with his head off, wandering in the moonlight. I saw that, sir, with my own eyes, I did.
Oh, get out of here, you blithering old fool. And I'm warning you, if I hear any more nonsense about this ghost, you'll lose your job, you understand? Now come along, be off with you.
Aye, sir. Begging your pardon, sir.
Come on, I'll give you chaps a drink.
Mr. Brownlee seems absolutely rabid on the subject of the ghost, eh?
Yes. Suspiciously so. Wonder what he's trying to hide.
Whatever it is, I don't think he'll be successful. In your profession, Holmes, you know that murder will out. It's true in my profession also. Try to suppress them as you may, gentlemen. Ghosts will out.
Well, Holmes, this place may be haunted, but I swear that I never spent a better night anywhere.
Ah, good morning, Mr. Harley.
Good morning. Good morning, sir. Good morning.
I'm glad to see I'm not the only late riser.
Oh, were you up late too, sir?
Yes, I was, Doctor. I decided to ignore the veiled threats of Mr. Brownlee, and so I did a little investigating in the chapel. Do you mind passing the teapot?
And what were the results of your investigations, Mr. Harley?
Well, there was no psychic manifestation, you understand, but I'm sure of one thing. That chapel is evil. Evil to the hearts of its stones. And I'll swear that evil does not stem from the hapless monk who was murdered there.
You confirm certain suspicions aroused by my own investigations last night. There is evil here, Mr. Harley, and I think I know its nature. Unless I mistake every sign and reaction, someone has been initiating the local peasantry to the evils of the Black Mass.
Mass! Good Lord, what a shocking thought.
My own sensations last night confirm your theory, Holmes. There is a coven here, I swear it, hiding its own obscene practices under cover of the haunting.
Well, that sounds quite feasible. After all, the people are so superstitious that they'd keep as far away as possible from the chapel when they heard the organ playing.
This problem falls into both our fields, Harley. The practice of black magic is a criminal offense.
Perhaps it's just as well the old laws against witchcraft are still in force.
I imagine, Mr. Harley, that you have your own methods of combating such forces as we're up against?
Oh, yes, Holmes. Oh, mine are not connected with the legal aspect of the case.
May I ask what you plan to do, sir?
Well, I have several rather elaborate preparations to make, Doctor. It'll take me most of the day, I'm afraid. However, I shall extend them to you all after dinner tonight.
Mr.
pleasant to sit here after a good dinner with a superb brandy at one's elbow and listen to the piano being so, so charmingly played.
You're very kind, darling.
Won't you play something more, Miss Bowley?
I'd love to.
Are you enjoying your stay down here?
Oh, very much, thank you. Both Mr. Harley and I have found the local folklore extremely interesting.
I see. You fellows haven't been investigating the haunted apple business again, have you?
Oh, look here. If you have, I shall be very angry. It's abusing my hospitality. I told you distinctly I didn't want any more talk of ghosts.
We are not talking of ghosts, my dear Mr. Brownlee. I have something even more important that I must fight now. It's possibly a little hard to imagine me as a crusader. Me, the such little man beside the four of you, as toweringly tall a quartet of men as I have ever faced. And yet, I am your St. George.
What on earth are you talking about, sir?
I'll tell you in secrecy. This mustn't reach the ears of the peasantry. I refer to myself as St. George because I go to wipe out an evil that lives in your midst, a living modern dragon.
Please, Mr. Harley, that sounds dreadfully frightening.
And to rid you all of this fiend, I must cleanse the chapel, purify it, exorcise it, remove its residue of psychic evil. That, gentlemen, is my mission tonight.
Dorothy!
She's fainted.
Get some smelling salts, quickly.
I'm afraid you were a little too graphic, Mr. Harley.
I'm sorry if I frightened the young lady, but I'm sure that after tonight she will have no further grounds for fear in Trevenis Manor.
Yes, old chap.
Did you hear anything?
Nothing but the owls and the clock striking midnight.
I'm getting off a jumper. What do you suppose Harley's up to?
I can imagine his procedure. Midnight. A crucial hour, I suppose, in his endeavors. I wish him luck. My own plans are not nearly as clear, unfortunately. I sense a guiding force here, but I lack the clues.
There is something, Holmes. Listen!
Great heavens! It's the organ in the chapel.
And Harley's in there alone.
Not alone. Listen to the organ. Pealing forth its madness. Come on, Watson. Something has gone horribly wrong.
You'll hear the rest of Dr. Watson's story in just a second. You know, a moment ago, I told you how much I thought you'd like Petri California Sherry. But I didn't tell you that Petri Sherry is the all-round, all-American wine. You can not only serve Petri Sherry before dinner, it's good after dinner, too. And, of course, later in the evening, when you're listening to the radio with some friends, a glass of Petri Sherry is just the thing. And say, Petri makes two kinds of sherry, the regular and Petri Pale Dry. To make sure you get the one that you like best, do what I do. Don't buy one, buy two. But remember, always buy Petri. Dr. Watson, that was a heck of a place to break off your story.
Then let us continue it as speedily as possible, my boy. As soon as we heard that devilish organ music, Holmes and I rushed out of the house and raced in the moonlight down the path leading to the ruined chapel. By the time we reached the entrance, the organ music had ceased, and the tall, gangling figure of David Pendragon was standing in our path.
You gentlemen be wanted at this
Never
time of
that.
Night.
What are you doing here?
I be here because the gentleman gave me 5 shillings to stand outside here and see that no one disturbed him. That's why I be here. And nobody did come or go. He still be there, he be.
But when you heard that organ music, why the devil didn't you go in?
Organ music? I heard no organ music,
come on,
sir.
Watson.
Great heavens. Look at him.
We're too late, poor devil. A knife through his heart.
It's obvious who did it, that fellow Pendragon. I'll go and grab him before he gets away.
He's not iron. This murder was planned with devilish cunning.
The curious thing, there's no sign of a struggle at all. Looks like he just stood here and allowed himself to be stabbed.
Are these chalk marks with which the body is surrounded? They're known as a pentagram, I believe. He thought it would protect him completely from supernatural forces.
Poor chap. For once his researches went too far.
Yes, because they touched not on the supernatural, but upon natural evil. And remember, Watson, that only 3 people besides ourselves and David Pendragon knew of this vigil.
Yes, Brownlee, his daughter, and young Miles, the secretary.
Exactly. Go back to the house, will you? And bring them here. Perhaps we can lay a ghost by trapping a murderer.
And it's That's all I know, Mr. Holmes.
Well, you've not established much so far, Holmes. Three of them all swear that they were asleep and that they didn't hear the organ.
Yes, then you can't prove otherwise, Holmes.
I think I can prove that one of you was not only awake, but also murdered Mortimer Harley.
But why should any of us want the poor man dead,
Mr.
Holmes?
In your case, young lady, I confess that I find it hard to conceive a motive.
Implying that Mr. Brownlee and I might have one.
Holmes, Miles, you must admit that you're responsible for Mr. Harley coming here.
And you, Mr. Brownlee, must admit that you did everything in your power to prevent the dead man carrying out his investigation. Why? What were you trying to hide?
Nothing. It's just that I wanted to sell the manor house. All this talk about ghosts was giving the place a bad name. If it had gone on, I'd never have disposed of the property.
Well, speculation can get us nowhere. Let's get down to facts. Is there any other entrance to this chapel besides the two doors?
None.
There was an old smuggler's cave which came out near the organ loft, but Father had it bricked up some years ago.
I had to. The tourists kept crawling in.
Go and examine it, will you, Watson, old chap?
All right, you are, Holmes.
If you don't mind my saying so, Mr. Holmes, it seems obvious who did this murder.
You told us David Pendragon admitted that no one went in or out as he stood guard. He must have it himself. Oh, the man's half-witted.
And superstitious. He might have killed Harley because he was attempting to interfere with a ghost.
And then played the organ to celebrate the occasion? I think you overestimate David Pendragon's capabilities, Miss Brownlee. Mr. Miles.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Pendragon is waiting outside. Would you be kind enough to ask him to come here for a moment, please?
Certainly.
Why don't you find out, Watson?
Well, it's easy to see where it was bricked up, but it's a solid wall now. No one could get in that way.
But if no one came in or out, who else could have killed Harley except Pendragon?
The ghost, or rather the person disguised as a ghost. The dead man expected a psychic manifestation. When he saw the supposed ghost coming towards him, he offered no resistance. He believed that the magical pentagram would protect him. Ah, there you are, David.
Aye, here I be, sir. But I don't know nothing more than what I told thee.
No, don't be frightened, Pendragon. All we want is the truth.
That's what I told thee, sir.
And tell us a little more, will you? When you said no one had entered the chapel tonight, you meant that no mortal man had entered, didn't you?
That I did, sir. But how could I say I'd seen the ghost when Mr. Brownlee here had told me I'd lose my job if I spoke of the ghost again?
Well, now we're getting somewhere. So you did see the ghost?
That I did, sir. The poor soul walking through the moonlight with no head on his body.
You saw it clearly?
Just as clearly as I sees you now, sir.
How tall was he?
Would you mind standing against the wall, sir?
Yes, of course.
He was as tall as, well, his shoulders come to just where your shoulders come now, sir.
A tall man, then, so we narrow it down to either you, Mr. Brownlee, or you, Mr. Miles.
This is utterly ridiculous.
Of course it is.
On the contrary, gentlemen, the case is solved.
Which one of them was it, Holmes?
Neither. Remember that the ghost is headless. That means that the impostor must have built up fake shoulders covering the head. On either of these men, it would have brought their shoulders to the level of my head.
Great Scott, it was...
Bravo, Mr. Holmes. I didn't think you'd catch me.
Dorothy! No, I don't believe it.
Miss Brownlee, I must warn you that...
Stay back! Don't any of you come near me. As you see, I have a revolver.
Dorothy, for heaven's sake!
Don't speak to me of heaven! You thought I was a sweet little girl, didn't you, Father? You didn't know your dear, demure daughter could murder a man, did you?
Why did you kill Mortimer Harley?
Because he was a meddler. For months I've been practicing black magic. For months I've been building up the legend of the headless monk and the organ music. It made me so wonderfully alone, so gloriously free to practice the rites. And then he came here. I let him live that first night because I thought he was a fool. But on second, when he said he was going to exorcise this chap, to purify it, as he said, he signed his death warrant. If you could have seen his face, if you could only have seen his stupid, toddled face, as I plunged the knife into him.
Dorothy!
He bled so beautifully.
Holmes, she's mad as a hatter. What are we going to do?
Baron, give me that revolver.
And let you take me to prison or an asylum? No, you'll never catch me.
She's backing up the stairs leading to the organ loft.
Dorothy, come back.
Don't try and follow me.
Look out. The railing's behind you.
Oh, and turn my head. Oh, no, Mr. Holmes. I... No! No!
Dorothy! My poor little girl.
Mr. Brownlee, the powers of evil are frightening. Your daughter had killed one man and might have killed more. She was insane. Hopelessly insane.
Doctor. That was quite an exciting story. Oh, I wish I could play the organ and write music for it. There's nothing like music to really express a thought.
Yes, I can just imagine the kind of music that you'd write. Probably catchy little ditties such as, "The Spliff family took the time to bring you such good wine. So when you eat and when you drink, remember Petri wine."
Oh, no, Doctor. Is that the way I affect you? Although on the level, you could probably write beautiful music to describe the way the grapes look on the vine in the sunlight. But what music could tell you about the Petri family? How long they've been making fine wine? You know, the Petri family has been making wine for generations, handing on down from father to son, the knowledge necessary to transform luscious, sun-ripened California grapes into delicious, fragrant wine. And when you see that name Petri on a bottle of wine, remember, you're not looking at a mere trademark. That name Petri is the personal assurance of the Petri family that every drop of wine in that bottle meets their unusually high standards. Petri wine is always good wine. It's got to be, because Petri took time to bring you good wine. Well, Dr. Watson, what new Sherlock Holmes adventure do you have lined up for us next week?
Well, now, let me think. Next week, Mr. Bartell, I'm going to tell you a story that started quiet enough as Holmes and I sat at a London dinner party, and yet, before the evening was over, we found ourselves involved in one of the most shocking scandals that ever rocked London society.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure was written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's story, The Adventure of the Devil's Foot. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Mr. Bruce, through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Murder on Margin. Yes, we have that Crime Club story for you. Come right over. Ah, you're here. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The book is on the shelf. Here it is, Murder on Margin by Robert George Dean. The very intriguing story of the stocks of passion and the bonds of death. Let's look at it under the reading lamp. It is late evening in a room of a shabby hotel in Midtown Manhattan. A trim, slick-haired man is eyeing a blonde girl sitting near him on the sofa. He watches her carefully as she pours herself a drink.
You're hitting the bottle tonight, ain't you, Joan? That's the fourth one you've had.
So what?
Nothing. Only when you start guzzling like that, it's a cinch something's eaten.
I told you I was tired.
Okay, baby, okay. Give me.
Oh, please, Nick, don't.
Yeah, you are tired, ain't you?
Well, what do you expect? You know better than anyone else what a day I put in.
You've had tougher days.
Maybe I have. Maybe I'm just getting sick of being a manicurist.
Well, I can't blame you for that. I'm not crazy about being a barber, either. Don't.
What?
Maybe you'll be able to quit your job soon.
How?
You know Larry Carson, don't you?
Who?
Larry Carson, the stockbroker. You know, the guy in the brokerage house a couple of doors from my shop.
I think I've done his nails.
Sure, sure you have, lots of times.
Well?
He's a smart trader. Knows the market inside out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's been giving some tips to Tony who cuts his hair. And Tony's made himself quite a bundle.
So what?
So I've been talking to Tony. He's going to pass them tips on to me.
Oh.
I'm going to start right away. Just as soon as Carson gets back.
Gets back?
Yeah. He told Tony today he was leaving town on a business trip. But he won't be gone long. What's the matter?
Oh, nothing. I think it's a swell idea, Nick.
You bet it is. Pretty soon I'll have some real dough and then... come here, baby.
Don't, Nick.
Just a little kiss, honey.
Don't. Huh?
Hey, you act like I'm poison or something. I said, come here.
And I said, let go of my wrist. Let go.
Hey, you got a bracelet on under your sleeve.
You're crazy.
Am I? Come on, let me see it.
No.
Let me see it.
Oh, my.
Just a minute, sweetheart. Okay.
Give me back that bracelet.
Shut up. Diamonds, huh? Are you dirty two-timing liar? Who's the guy? I asked you, who's the guy?
Larry Carson gave it to me.
Carson?
Yes, it doesn't mean anything, Nick. I swear, I've been playing him for a sucker, that's all.
Playing him for a sucker?
Yeah, just getting all I could out of him for the two of us. No, Nick, don't!
For the two of us, huh? Come on, get up. Get up, I said. Joan.
Oh,
are you all right?
Get out. Get out!
Okay, I'm going. So long, son.
Yes, Ruth?
It's rather late.
I'm quite aware of that.
Well, you mentioned that you wanted to turn in early.
Still the dutiful wife, eh? Well, I have some market reports I want to study.
Oh.
Answer that, will you?
Hello? Oh, yes, just a minute. For you, Larry.
For me?
Yes.
Hello?
Hello, Larry. This is Joan Randall.
I thought I told you never to call this number.
I know what you told me, but I had to talk to you. Tried the other place and couldn't get you.
I see. All right, what do you want?
I heard you were taking a little trip tomorrow.
Yes?
I thought we had a date.
Sorry, I meant to call you about that before I left.
Oh, you meant to, huh?
Yes, it came up suddenly. It's just a routine business trip. I'll be back in a few days.
I don't like it.
Oh, don't be silly.
I'm not. I've had the feeling for some time now that you wanted to brush me off.
What?
I want to warn you, Larry. Don't do it.
I shall do whatever I please.
Yeah? Well, get this through your head, Mr. Carson. You'll pay off or else. Hello? Did you hear me? I said you'll...
This one didn't lie either, did she?
Gilda.
It's convenient to have a wife, isn't it, Larry? It must sound convincing when you tell them I won't give you a divorce.
Yes, I guess it does.
Larry, when are you going to set me free?
Soon.
You've been saying that for months now. Carl and I want to be married, and I want a clean start. That's why I haven't begun any action myself.
Yes?
We don't want to wait any longer. I want a divorce now.
Very moving appeal, my dear. But I confess I don't understand it. You and Carl Hamill? Why, he's strictly a lightweight.
Is he? Then why did you ask me to be a partner in your firm?
Well, that's quite simple, Ruth. I needed some money. No, I'm sorry I took him in.
So is Carl.
I don't doubt it.
Larry?
Hmm?
I heard you mention something about a business that...
Well?
If you were to stay away a long time, it would delay my divorce.
That's quite an idea.
Yes. I've got another idea, too, Larry.
Oh? What is it?
I'm afraid I'd better keep this one to myself.
Oh, Mr. Hamill.
Oh, good morning, sir. Can I help you?
Well, yes, at least I hope so. I'd like to see Mr. Carson.
Well, Mr. Carson is a very busy man.
Oh, I know, Mr. Hamill. I've been waiting here outside his office since 10:15, and now it's 20 after.
I see. Well, I was just going in to see Mr. Carson myself. I'll tell him that you're here.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, by the way, what's your name?
Pat Barton.
Pat Barton? The private detective?
Oh, yes. I want to consult him about some stock.
Oh, I'll be right back.
Okay. Well, I beg your pardon, sir. Do you mind if I glance at the ticker?
No.
Thanks. Let's see. Commercial Solutions, 31.5. Say, that looks like a pretty good stock, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yes, sir. Might go up to 32.
Yes, Larry, I will. Oh, was that last order 29.25? Right. Oh, Mr. Barton.
Yes, Mr. Hamill.
I told Mr. Carson you were waiting. He'll see you in 15 minutes.
Oh, thank you. Meanwhile, I'll just keep my eye on the ticker.
Fine. See you later.
Right. Let's see. Salt preferred, 20.25. Elias.
All right. right, Mr. Barton. I think we can go in now.
Okay, Mr. Hamill.
Oh, Larry, this is... Well, that's funny. He isn't here.
You're wrong, Mr. Hamill. Look, on the floor near the desk.
Good Lord.
Someone put a rope around his neck and pulled it tight. Very tight.
I swear I don't know how you do it, Pat, but every time there's a murder, you're right in the middle of it.
Well, I'm sorry, Lieutenant Riley. It just happens. I don't arrange them.
No, huh? Well, the way you solve them sometimes makes me wonder. Okay, forget it. Let's take another look at the late Mr. Carson.
Okay.
Let's see. After he was strangled, he must have slipped to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But that would hardly account for his must-up appearance, though.
What do you mean?
Well, his shirt is half out, and his belt is twisted. Do you think that maybe he was just a sloppy dresser?
No, Lieutenant. You can see his suit was obviously just pressed. And look at the shine on his shoes.
Uh-huh.
I think the killer must have searched him.
For what? His wallet was still on him and nothing was missing from it.
Yes, but there wasn't much money in it. Did the medical examiner give you the time of death?
Yeah, probably between 10:15 and 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I suppose that tells you who the murderer is, sir.
Not quite, Lieutenant, but it helps.
Yeah, a lot. What gets me is how the killer got in and out. Now, there's Carson's private entrance leading to the hallway into the street, and that's locked.
Uh-huh.
And now, this door here to the main office, through which you entered. Now, you say that you were sitting right next to it from a quarter to ten on?
Yes, and the only one who entered was Carl Hamill.
I think I'll have a little talk with that guy. Mr. Hamill?
Yes, Lieutenant?
Would you mind stepping in here?
Not at all.
Mr. Hamill, according to Mr. Barton here, you were the only one to enter this office.
Yes?
And that was about 20 after 10, a time when Carson might have been killed.
What do you mean? You know that he was alive when I left the office.
Do we?
Well, of course, Mr. Barton. Well, you were sitting right at the door when I came out. You heard me turn around and ask him about that last quotation.
Yes, I heard you, but I didn't hear him.
Huh? Oh, that's right. I remember now. He didn't answer me. He just nodded.
Oh, I see.
Mr. Hamill, excluding Mr. Carson, who had a key to the private entrance of this office?
Well, I believe Mrs. Carson had one.
Oh, she did, eh?
Yes, but surely you don't think that she had anything to do with this. Why, she couldn't...
Take it easy, Mr. Hamill.
Pat? Yes, Lieutenant?
One of my men reported that in the hallway leading from Carson's private entrance to the street is a door of a private club.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, there's a doorman posted at that door from 9 o'clock on. He'll be able to tell us just who entered this office by way of that private entrance.
Oh, good. Well, I get...
Yeah, what's that? What is that?
Supply closet, Lieutenant.
Let me out.
Oh, there she is. Behind the filing cabinet.
Oh.
Hey, give me a hand, will you? I can't seem to get out of here by myself.
All right. We'll just get this cabinet out of the way. There we are. Okay, come on out.
Yeah, sure.
Why, Miss Randall.
You know this girl, Mr. Hamill?
Why, yeah, she's the manicurist at a barbershop a few doors down the street.
Oh, okay, Miss Randall, talk.
Huh?
She seems to be pretty drunk, Lieutenant.
Yeah. What were you doing in that closet, sister?
Who wants to know?
I'm Lieutenant Riley of the police.
Police?
Yes. Take a look at the floor near the desk.
Oh, Barry's dead, huh?
Uh-huh. You ought to know.
Me? I didn't do it.
No? How'd you get in here?
I had a key. Larry gave it to me.
Oh.
The louse was going to run out on me. I wanted to have a little talk with him.
Uh-huh.
I got here early, before 9. Didn't want anybody to spot me coming in. I hid behind the cabinet in the closet.
How come you're so boiled?
Well, I knew it'd be a long wait, so I took a flask along. I was nervous. And before I knew it, the flask was empty. And then I passed out.
Uh-huh. Miss Randall, there's a keyhole in that closet door. Did you see or hear anything that might help us?
No, not a thing.
I see. Okay, sister. I'm going to send you home to sober up. But don't get any idea that you're out of this mess. I'm going to check on you all the way. Pat?
Yes, Lieutenant?
Get your hat. We'll start check with the barber shop where she works. Were you Carson's barber, Nick?
No, Lieutenant. Tony took care of him.
Oh, well, where is this Tony?
Well, it's been raining all morning. We were slow, and Tony and the others ducked out. They're probably chewing the fat in a cafeteria down the street.
Uh-huh. You got a manicurist named Joan Randall?
Yeah, she didn't show up this morning.
I don't think she'll be in today, Nick.
Huh? Well, what do you mean, Mr. Barton?
Why are you so nervous?
Well, Joan and me, we've been kind of going around together, and if anything's happened to her...
Well, nothing's happened to her yet.
But she's in quite a spot.
You see, we found her in Mr. Carson's closet.
Yeah?
She was pickled, Nick. Now, was that a habit of hers?
Well, when she's worried, she likes a couple of shots.
Uh-huh.
Nick, it seems that Joan and Mr. Carson were quite friendly. Did you know that?
Yeah, it didn't mean anything. He had a lot of dough and... Well, you know how it is.
Yes, we know.
You don't think she killed Carson, do you?
We're not sure, Nick. But if you ask me, you're going to need a new manicurist.
For me, Lieutenant, it is unbelievable. I simply refuse to believe it.
I know, Sasha, I know. But Carson's dead. You've got to help us.
Me help you? How?
What time were you at your post this morning?
What time? Why, 9 o'clock. In all my 23 years as doorman to this club, I arrive at 9 sharp. Not before, not later.
Uh-huh. And from your post, you can see anyone who enters the hallway to go to Mr. Carson's office.
Absolutely.
Sasha, do you know Joan Randall, the manicurist from the barbershop around the corner?
You mean the blonde barish? Sure I know her.
Did you see her enter the hallway this morning?
No.
Are you sure?
Absolutely.
She must have got here before 9, like she said.
Did you see anyone else, Sasha?
Yes, just one person.
Who was it?
It was Mrs. Carson.
Mrs. Carson, eh? What time was that?
About quarter after... 20 after 10.
And she went down the hallway to Mr. Carson's office?
Yes.
Did you see her go in?
No. The hallway turns to the left. You can't see the door.
He's right, Lieutenant.
Okay. Now, I want you to be very careful about this next one, Sasha. When did she come out?
I don't know.
Huh?
You see, a little while after she came in, I had to call a cab for a member.
Yeah?
I was outside for a couple of minutes.
In other words, she could have slipped out during that time.
All right.
Oh.
Sasha, would it have been possible for anyone else to have entered while you were outside?
No, this could not happen. When I went out, I looked up and down the street. There was nobody near enough to sleep in.
Oh, I see. Well, Lieutenant, what's next on the menu?
A blue plate special. Mrs. Carson. Mrs. Carson, do you have any idea who might have murdered your husband?
No, Lieutenant.
I have.
Yes?
You, Mrs. Carson.
Me?
Yes.
Why, that's absurd. Utterly absurd.
For your information, you were seen going down the hallway to your husband's office.
What?
Oh, come, Mrs. Carson. The identification was positive. You were there, weren't you?
Yes, DeBarton. But I didn't see Larry.
Huh?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, I went up to the door of the office, and then I stopped.
Why?
The transom was open. I heard Carl, Mr. Hamill, talking to Larry. I lost my nerve and left.
What do you mean you lost your nerve?
Well, I guess I'd better tell you the whole story.
Yeah, I guess you'd better.
I'd wanted a divorce from Larry for some time. Without going into it, I can assure you I had very good reasons.
Yes, we met one of them.
Hmm?
Never mind, Mrs. Carson. Go on, please.
Well, I met Carl Hamill, my husband's partner. We fell in love. I told Larry about it and asked him for a divorce so that Carl and I could be married.
Mm-hmm.
Larry kept putting me off. Then last night I learned that he was taking a trip out of town. He said he'd be gone for only a short time.
Yes?
I had the feeling that he was up to something. You see, he was very spiteful. I felt that he was going to stay away to delay my divorce. I made up my mind that he wasn't going to get away with it.
Uh-huh.
This morning I set out for his office for a showdown. I took a gun along.
A gun, huh?
Yes, but when I stood outside Larry's door and heard Carl's voice, I realized how foolish I'd been. I knew that I could never kill Larry.
Uh-huh.
I turned around and went home.
Mrs. Carson, did you hear what Mr. Hamill and your husband were talking about?
Yes. They were discussing some stock quotations.
Did Hamill mention the quotation on murder?
What do you mean?
You don't think the cop... Oh, no. He didn't kill Larry.
Of course not. He didn't. You didn't. Nobody did. Only the guy is dead and the commissioner wants to know why.
Hello?
Hello, Ruth.
Oh, Carl. I was hoping that you'd all...
You heard about Larry?
Yes. The police have just left.
Oh.
Carl, I'm afraid we're in trouble.
What's the matter?
I did something terribly foolish. I went to Larry's office this morning.
What? But why did you...
Wait, I didn't see him. When I got to the door, I heard you talking to him.
Oh.
I heard you quarreling.
Did you tell the police about it?
No. No, I told them you were discussing stock quotations. Carl, is there anything you want to tell me?
Ruth, you don't think I killed him, do you?
No.
But, darling, you sound as if...
I love you, Carl. No matter what happened, remember that. I love you.
Good evening, Lieutenant. I made it as fast as I could. What's up?
I've got some more pieces for our puzzle.
You have?
Yes. Do you remember when we examined the corpse? You thought the killer had searched him?
Yes.
Yeah, you were right. And whoever it was made off with $100,000.
What?
I had a man go over the books at Carson's. There was $100,000 missing from the credit balances.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it looks like Carson was going to take it on the lam, you see? And he figured on traveling light to throw everyone off guard.
Yes, probably just an overnight bag and the money. From the appearance of his disarranged clothing, I'd say he had the cash in a money belt.
Uh-huh.
Did you speak to Hamill about this?
Yes. Yes, and he was quite upset. Not only over the loss of the dough, he said. He was worried about the effect on the firm's business.
Mm. Well, is there any way to trace that money?
No, and I haven't got the ghost of an idea who could have... Wait a minute.
Hmm?
Joan Randall. I've had the feeling that dame was holding something back.
You think she took it?
Either that or she knows who did. Come on, Pat. Let's get to her before she puts away another quart.
Maybe she's out, Lieutenant.
Yeah, Pat, but not the way you mean. She's probably hit that bottle again. Oh, there's no use. The door's locked.
I have a key, Lieutenant.
Huh?
A key that opens a lot of doors.
Oh, well, go ahead. Make believe I'm not looking.
Okay.
There we are. Now let's see. The light switch ought to be... Here. Well, I don't smell any liquor, so maybe... Holy smoke. She really is out. Look, for good.
Yes. Whoever stabbed her wasn't kidding. She must have been lying on the bed. That's odd.
What is?
Well, apparently, after she was stabbed, she still had enough strength to reach down and clutch one of her shoes from under the bed.
Yeah, she probably rolled over and held on to whatever came into her hand.
No, Lieutenant. Shoes are usually placed together on the floor. And from the position of the one still there, it'd have had to swing to get the shoe she's holding.
Yeah. Well, why do you think she grabbed it, Pat?
I think it was an attempt to tell us who murdered her.
Oh. Well, it's a woman's shoe. And the only other woman in the case is Mrs. Carson.
Mm.
Or maybe... Yeah. Yeah. While I was talking to Hamill about that money, he told me he used to be in a shoe manufacturer.
What?
Yeah. Well, I guess that does it.
I'm not sure.
Huh?
There's something that keeps buzzing at the back of my mind. Something... I, of course, Larry Carson's shoes.
Larry Carson's shoes?
Yes. Now, there's just one thing we ought to check, Lieutenant, and then I think you'll be able to wrap this case up. Better keep back out of sight, Lieutenant.
Okay, Pat. I just wanted to make sure that Sasha is still sitting on that park bench.
Oh, don't worry. I've got my eye on him every second.
Are you certain your plan will work?
I don't see how it can miss. A half hour ago, Sasha telephoned the killer. His message will force the murderer to meet Sasha here in the park.
I see. Then you expect another knifing job, huh?
Right. We'll have to be on our toes to prevent it. Wait, Lieutenant. I think we're getting a bite.
Hello, my friend. I was beginning to think you weren't coming. I thought maybe... Help!
Get him, Lieutenant. Get him.
Strap her and shoot!
Good shot, Lieutenant. Are you all right, Sasha?
Yes, Mr. Barton.
Good. Is he alive, Lieutenant?
Yeah, the bullet just creased his scalp. Okay, Nick, come on. Up on your feet. As a barber, you usually stand behind a chair. Well, now we're going to let you sit in one.
Did Nick reveal where he hid the money, Lieutenant?
Yes, it was under the floor in his room.
Oh, good. It's nice of you to give me a lift home, Lieutenant.
Ah, that's all right, Pat. You deserve it. And Sasha, too.
Ah, it was nothing. Nothing at all. Only don't ever ask me to do it again.
Don't worry. We won't. Say, Pat, how did you tumble to Nick anyway?
Well, there was the fact of the shoes. Carson's and Jones.
Uh-huh.
Carson's shoes were shined. And that was peculiar.
Why?
Well, since it rained all morning, his shoes should have been spotted.
Yeah, that's right.
But I failed to see the importance of that fact until Joan was killed. She died in the act of reaching for her shoe.
Uh-huh.
And then it hit me. Someone had shined Carson's shoes. Obviously, he wouldn't have done it himself. So, the only other possibility was a shoe-shine man.
Yeah, but where in the world...
Well, since there was no shoe-shine man involved in this case... I turned to the only person who could have impersonated one.
Nick the barber.
Exactly. He was alone in his shop. Not only the barbers were gone, but also the shoeshine man.
I see. So Nick dressed up in the dark apron, carried the box, and got by.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Wait a minute. How did he get into the Carson's office without Sasha seeing him?
But you know, Lieutenant, there are some men who are invisible.
Invisible?
Yes. That is, they're taken for granted. Nobody observes them. Like a mailman, for instance.
Oh.
Well, a shoeshine man visiting the offices in a business building is exactly the same. You pay no attention to him, so he loses his identity.
I see.
Of course, when I brought the point up with Sasha, he remembered.
Oh, что такое? Я не знаю, что это.
What did you say, Sasha?
Never again. For the rest of my life will I get a shoeshine.
And so closes tonight's Crime Club book, Murder on Margin, based on a story by Robert George Dean. James Erthine did the radio adaptation, Roger Bauer produced, and Jock McGregor directed. Jack McBride played Lieutenant Riley, Julie Stevens was Joan, Helen Shields was Ruth Carson, Danny Occo played Sasha, Ray Thompson was Pat, Joe DeSantis was Nick, and Sherling Oliver was heard as Carl Hamill. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello. I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Yes, come over a week from tonight. Good. We have the very exciting story of a package that was wrapped up by death. It's called Murder Makes a Mummy. In the meantime, there is a new Crime Club book available this week and every week at bookstores everywhere. Yes, it's available now. Fine. And we'll look for you next week.
This program came from New York. This is the world's largest network, the Mutual Broadcasting System.